Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Adam Devaney. He is the founder of Life's Work Clinic and Life's Work Coaching, as a licensed clinical social worker with more than a decade of experience as a clinical therapist. Adam discovered that through the use of very specialized approaches, emotional and mental health transformation could actually be time collapsed into a relatively short time frame. This profoundly affected not only his own life, but also the lives of his clients, and he ultimately came to understand that this was part of his life's work and such an integral part of his experiences and relationships that he ended up dedicating his life to sharing this process with others. And with that, Adam, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is my pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me here.
You're welcome. And we met through another mutual acquaintance, Whitney Riley, and it's serendipitous because I just recorded an episode of a podcast with her just prior to recording ours. So the fact that we were introduced to each other around the same time and we're recording our podcast on the same day is serendipitous to me.
I feel like that's life, right? Like that, it really is. And the more you plug into that, the more you're open to that, the more you notice it, every aspect of your life.
Oh, yeah. I've looked at the way my life has unfolded, particularly in the last 21 plus years of my life, and the people that have come into my life have not come into my life by chance. It's always been by the grand design, which ultimately has led me to eliminate the word coincidence from my vocabulary. You have a very interesting background, and I know we're going to get into that. But the first question that I want to ask you is to tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Sure, Dave. Our experiences shape so much about the path that our life takes. And sometimes those experiences are just things that we never anticipated or saw being something that was going to be directional for us. My work now is something that I never would have seen. But when I look back on all the experiences I've had, they really all culminated in this and funneled into this one thing. And to me, that's something I celebrate. And so I'm just going to go back a little bit to when I was about 13 years old, raised by a single mom, dad kind of, you know, off doing his own thing. And my mom had the foresight to get me involved in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that's a mentorship program. And through that, I met a man named Steve. So Steve was a little older than me, about 13 years older than me, and just starting his career. And he was my big brother, my mentor, if you will, which was really important. At 13 years old, boys really start to really need that male influence in their life, the positive male influence, and going from a boy to becoming a man and knowing what that looks like. A shout out to all the single moms out there. Single moms are, that's not their thing. It's the men that really need to step in at that time. And for a few years, Steve was my big brother. And then he moved literally as far away on the planet as you can get. And we kept in touch. Of course, this, I'm old enough, that was like snail mail and phone calls. Steve found a really nice woman in Australia, got married, had a few kids. And so the life that Steve had really ended up influencing the life that I had, with more so than just the time we spent together. If I back up to when Steve was young, Steve grew up in an upper middle class family. Father worked and mom stayed home, right? But Steve's parents, really his mom, but both by default, struggled with alcohol. And I can confirm this. I met them several times. And it was something that Steve really didn't talk about a lot. It was a conversation that he had with people when they were about to meet his parents. Back when Steve was about 8 years old, he spent a particularly difficult morning that morning at the household. And he had just felt like he'd had enough. And he wrote on a piece of paper, "My mom is an alcoholic." Right? And he folded that piece of paper up and put it in his pocket. He was planning on handing that to someone he trusted at school. As the day went on, he had several opportunities to hand that piece of paper off. Now, of course, at 8 years old, he had no idea what was going to happen. He just knew something had to change. And every time that he had an opportunity to share that note with a trusted adult at school, he just took all that emotion and he stuffed it down into a little knot in his gut. And at the end of the day, when he hadn't given that note to anybody, he just decided that's what he was going to do. That this whole thing was going to be his secret. And whenever this came up and the emotions attached to this came up, he was just going to swallow them down and stuff them down in his gut. Maybe some of your listeners have experienced something similar to that. Humans are really great at swallowing their emotions. Fast forward 30 years, okay? He's married now. He's got kids. He really wants his kids and his wife to develop a relationship with his parents. And so they come from Australia, find some work here in the States. They get an apartment. I actually remember going out and visiting them when they were living in that apartment. And one day, Steve comes home from work and his wife meets him at the door, their hands on her hips, right? She's like, "I hate your mother. We need to go back to Australia." My brother's got to be kidding me, right? Now, both of the women in his life are at odds.
And he gathers up his family, flies back to Australia.
2.5 months later, Steve's diagnosed with bowel cancer, right? Where he'd been stuffing that down his whole life. And all it took was that final between the two women in his life. And all of a sudden, he was at the doctor's being like, "Man, I just do not feel right." So unfortunately for Steve and everybody in his life that had metastasized, the doctors were like, "Steve, you're cured." But he, like a lot of people who get cancer at 38 years old, he's thinking to himself, how in the world did this happen? And so he went on a quest. Part of his quest ended up with a spiritual awakening. Mindbodies.soul.com.au was formed. But it all changed for him one retreat. He went to a retreat up in Byron Bay. And on the fourth day of this meditation retreat, he woke up into the worst panic attack of his life. He tried exercise, all the things that were going for a walk on the beach,
taking a swim, right?
Eventually, he just walked into this event and he was like, "What is going on?" And the leader says to him, "Man, Steve, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to you."
And he's thinking,
"I don't know what you're talking about. This is horrible." 45 minutes later, right? And he sits him down and with someone, another teacher, and they did this eye-to-eye meditation, kind of real window into the soul type thing. That's when he realized, it dawned on him, that he'd spent all his whole life stuffing those emotions down from his childhood and from his parents into that little knot in his gut. And the other teacher said to him, "Steve, I want you to bring that out into the open." My brother's like, "You're crazy, man. There's no way in the world I'm doing that. I've stuffed it there because it'll devour me if I look at it." The teacher says, "No, it's okay. You can bring it out with love, shower with love, bring it out in the light and take a look at it." My brother did that. That's when he realized he'd given himself cancer from doing this.
Yeah.
And so my brother's having this realization in looking at it for the first time, he starts to realize the lessons from this in his life. Big, profound lessons. And the teacher says, "Steve, now I want you to let that go." My brother's like, "I just let this go?" He just, "Yeah, you can do it." My brother's like, "Oh, okay." And he let it go. That man is in his early 60s now, and he will look you in the eye anytime you ask him to tell you he'll never give himself cancer again.
That's an incredible story. And I'll tell you, for me, and I was listening to to your early childhood experience. And the one thing is that early experience does matter. And a father leaving the household or not being emotionally present, however that plays out, can impact the early experiences of a child. And that can, if the narrative isn't intervened with or changed early on, that can lead to problems in later adulthood. But interestingly, I resonate with that paragraph because I was raised as an only child. My father had left when I was 5 years old, but I never saw him again or had a relationship with him again. But he was the type of individual, his history did not allow him to stay in a traditional marriage. He had come from a family system where if anybody asked anybody in that system for emotional attachment, it was so intimidating, they just walked away. And understanding my father's history 55 years later, although I didn't have the opportunity to do any closure with that or talk with him further about that, enabled me to understand that he left more because he loved us as opposed to because he didn't love us. He did not want his history to interfere with my continued growth and development and with whatever choices my mother wanted to make, which she never remarried again. But for me, early experience mattered, and it took me quite a while to come to terms with that and make peace with it. But the other thing is you mentioned about stuffing those emotions inward. Men are great at stuffing emotions inward anyway. But I think the fact that Steve realized that I gave myself stomach cancer by suppressing my emotions, and we know that many cancers are stress related. And a stomach cancer would be one of those. Where's it going to go? It's going to go right here. And any emotions that aren't outwardly expressed are going to do damage to us within and cause other and result in not only physical issues, but perhaps depression, anxiety, and agitation, anger, you name it. No.
Yeah, and that's it. Exactly. And the real work, right? When you're talking about histories like you just described, histories like Steve, histories like mine, right? The real work in coming into adulthood is doing that deep inner work of learning to recognize those patterns, recognizing those sore spots, recognizing, honoring the pain body and releasing it. It's not easy work, right? But it is like super important work, right? And so I'll tell you another experience I had along this line.
This was 2007.
I was a paid petitioner. Great job. Loved that job. Probably as good at that job as I was ever good at any job. Right. And we had this company. It was a security company who just kept shutting us down at events all summer long. It got really bad. I just knew when I saw one of their guys, I was like, this is not going to last long today. And they were cutting us off from what we needed. Our clientele, our customers were, right, the public. We needed them in large groups. Anyway, one day I had gotten shut down by them again. And it did not help that the Monster energy drink people were down there with a truckload of ice and free Monster energy drinks. So I was super jacked up, right? And I'm a pretty intense person anyway. And we got shut down. It was a really bad scene with police. It was just not good. I went back home and I was staying with my mom at the time because she lived in a population area. And so I was like, man, I can't go home to my mom's house. I was angry, but it wasn't her problem, right? And so I went to my favorite park. There was this little section in the park that I always had to myself. And I did a little bit of Tai Chi because that helps move energy along. And it had worked in the past. But when I got done with my Tai Chi that day, I was still all jacked up, right? And so I'm walking through this part of the park, right? And I'm like, okay, I still can't go back to my mom's house right now. And this little voice in my head, that still small voice, that intuition, that thing that if you listen to it, it's always right. It's only wrong when we second guess it and our mind gets in the way. And that still small voice said to me, just let it go. And it stopped in my tracks. So I stopped, closed my eyes. I allowed myself, I dropped all resistance to the emotional state that I was in. And I allowed myself to fully feel it, to feel it in its richness. I, honestly honored it. And it was a, it was an intense, fast vibration, right? And then I took a breath and I just gave it back. And I turned giggling to myself, lighter. It was a profound moment of simplicity.
Sometimes it's the simplest things that we tell ourselves that have the most profound effect. And something exactly. something simple is just letting it go, but also buying into the fact that you can let it go, empowering yourself so that you can let it go. I'm sitting here and I'm reminded of a passage from my favorite book on the afterlife of Billy Fingers, that all roads ultimately lead to the same place, and that's the present moment. So any road that we've been down in the past, any of our past experiences, our ancestors, history, all of that has an impact on the choices that we make in the present.
Yeah. It's the momentum we have.
Yep.
Right. And mm-hmm. So we need to recognize that inertia, because we can ultimately, and I will get to how this happens later in our talk, right? But ultimately, when we were stuffing those things down, they don't stay there and they come back up and they leave the dots. And ultimately, in the end, we could be living a life that's just fully driven by our subconscious. We're not designed to do that, right?
No.
So I went back to school after that. Went back and I received my master's in social work. And ultimately, in the end, I became a therapist and I learned a lot from that. Let's just say that as a therapist, it is the teaching. It is when the teaching really starts. I am a true believer in what the Course in Miracles has to say about teaching, in that it is always a two-way street.
Absolutely.
And so I was uniquely tuned into my client's struggles. So it was a few years later. I'd been in my career for about 8 years at that point. And my wife had gone to bed, and I was flipping through Amazon, seemingly such an innocuous thing that you wouldn't think would be involved in changing your life. We had just bought this free trial for the Gaia channel. So I'm flipping through there and I see this thing called E-Motion. I'm like, okay, what's this? Turns out it was a documentary on Dr. Bradley Nelson's emotion code. And the video started out like all the other ones, people talking about how this is the most important thing, but never really telling you what it is. Eventually, we get to Dr. Bradley Nelson talking about what this process actually is. And he starts talking about it. He says, there's this, we have the conscious mind and we have the subconscious mind. And the conscious mind is our likes and our dislikes and our opinions. And it's maybe 1% to 5% of our mental energy at any given time. 95% to 99% is your subconscious mind, right? It's just like a computer. It just does what you tell it to do. It doesn't really have any opinion of its own. And it's a vast storehouse and it remembers everything. So when we have these traditionally negative emotions, what we call negative emotions, right? Which are really just part of the human experience. We go into resistance. My letting go process was part of dropping the resistance, right? So we go into resistance to the emotion and we end up basically swallowing it, stuffing it, or maybe convincing ourselves we'll set it aside and compartmentalize it and we'll deal with it later. And of course, we never do. That sits in our body because we don't have some sort of external hard drive here. So it has to sit somewhere in our subconscious. You might as well just say, is our body, right? Certain emotions are going to sit in certain places. Anxiety, worry, nervousness in our gut. Heartache, obviously, right here. Anger in our liver. Certain places like that. But it's not just going to sit there. Because each one of those emotions has a trigger associated with it. Maybe a dozen triggers, right? That you're not even consciously aware of, right? And it'll come back up at the most inopportune times, right? Mm-hmm. And lead to thoughts. So what we want to do is we want to connect in with the subconscious and we want to actually have it let us know what the trapped emotions are, because it's a great reservoir, never sleeps and never forgets, right? Then we go through a process of releasing the emotion. And then he says, and the tool we use to do this is a process called muscle testing or applied kinesiology. Something else my brother taught me in 2004. This is what I'm saying. Our relationships are so powerful in our life if we look for the connections.
And my first thought was going back to Steve in terms of his realization that he needed to release those emotions. You went through a similar process where you just heard this little voice say, let it go, where you released whatever emotions were trapped. And now you look at Dr. Bradley Nelson, who's talking about the emotion code and about releasing emotions. So you take a look at three very, what seems to be very random events, and you could, if you commit to awareness, you could take a look at the commonality and empower yourself to take bits and pieces from each of those experiences or find commonalities and empower yourself to move forward and address whatever life challenges you're dealing with.
Yeah, that's it. And it's because we're meaning-making machines, humans, right? Mm-hmm. And emotions are just one of the pathways that we do that. And this is what happened. I communicated with my brother. I sent him a message on Telegram, and I was like, bro, we got to get on video. You're not going to believe what I just found. And so we're on video, and I'm telling him about this. He's on his computer, and he's looking it up. And he's like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. He's like, oh, there's a training. He's like, I just signed up for that training. I'm like, there's a training? And of course, you know how brothers are. Even though we're not biological siblings, he signed up. I have to sign up. And we both went through the certification process, which took us about 4.5-5 months to do together. And then we had a third person, who a friend of his, that joined us in the certification process as well. And we kind of used technology and you know, Telegram to do video. And we were doing emotion code sessions across the world. And so now, of course, that totally changed my therapeutic process. And so it really profoundly shifted things when it was like that funnel I was talking about, like all these life experiences. And then you're like, I see. Yeah, that's it. And that shifted everything.
So you began in your own therapeutic practice to use emotion code and emotional release techniques with your clients, correct?
I immediately started.
Can you give our listeners an overview of how those techniques work and why you feel that they are just so therapeutically beneficial to those individuals who have received those techniques?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. Let me give you a little more biographical background, and then I'll share how it's done. Because every emotion code practitioner is as unique as there are people, right? My brother's approach to this, the technique is the same, but everybody's approach is different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One day, actually, in the beginning of my career as a social worker, okay, I took a job, and I'll be real brief with this. I took a job with a woman who really ultimately was, there's no really nice way to say, she was a monster. That was my first job as a social worker, right? And I worked for her for a number of years. And when I quit working for her after 5.5 years, ultimately I went to work with a competitor of hers, which made me public enemy number one for her, even though I'd seen her do that to a lot of other people over the years. Anyway, if you think about how bad that could get multiplied by a factor of 10, and it got bad, okay? And it was a traumatic thing. And so my wife and I had just got married. We just had a kid, just bought a house in a town like probably 40 minutes away from where we were. And when we drove into the next town to do our shopping, which we did about every 2 weeks, we had to drive by her house. And it turns out that just that her house or her truck or whatever was one of those triggers for just a big cluster of those subconsciously trapped and repressed emotions that I had from my experiences in that relationship. Okay. And I came home that day and I was like, this is ridiculous. I just went to the next town to go shopping. I shouldn't be having this response. And I thought to myself, can I use the emotion code to heal from experiences in a relationship? So I create an intention, part of the process of working with the emotion code, because we're working with the subconscious, and which is very much like a computer that just takes prompts. You have to give it a very specific prompt in this process. Okay. So I created an intention. There are trapped emotions in myself from my experiences with so-and-so that need to be released. Very simple, very straightforward. Okay. And then I used muscle testing to confirm that there were, yes, there were, did not surprise me. And then I used muscle testing to figure out how many emotions. Turns out there were 17 from this relationship. 35 minutes later, I had identified through this process and released all 17 of those trapped emotions. 35 minutes.
Yeah, so releasing 17 of those could take 35 months or more of therapy.
Right? And in talk therapy, you do risk re-traumatizing a person over those 35 months.
Yeah, and talk therapy may not work for individuals who are extremely traumatized because the left part of their brain, specifically Broca's area, shuts down when they're re-experiencing trauma. They can't verbalize a trauma. So when they tell you, I have no words for what's happened to me, there's a basic scientific reason why that may be the case.
Physiological function, why that is. Yeah. And that day, she had me at about a 7 or 8 on the volume. Okay. She hadn't done anything. I just driven by her house, but I had all this unresolved trauma. And after that 35 minutes, that had gone down to about a 1, where it was supposed to be. And what happened was, it was now just a set of experiences I had. It was someone that I knew, someone that I had a set of experiences with. And now what was open to me, because there was no cloud in my way, okay, 17 clouds actually, right? I could learn from that experience.
Yeah, because it objectifies the emotional experience when you release it. And then you can take a look at the greater lessons that relationship imparted.
So I'll tell you a funny story. 2 weeks later, we're back in town doing some shopping, right? And we come back, and this time, my amazing wife is triggered to no end, driving by her house, okay? And she's sitting there, she's all worked up, right? And she stops, and she looks at me, and she says, oh, I got to do that work, don't I? I said, I go get the kit. And now that my wife and I have both done that work, because we both work for her. Now that we've both done that work, we've even run into her in a couple of different locations. And it's just not been a triggering experience. My wife had a 30-minute conversation with her right across the street, right? It's not a big deal. Let's turn the volume down.
So help me understand. It's basically starts with stating an intention.
Starts before that. Let's just say that. Every great and miraculous thing starts and ends with intention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I'm working with somebody with the emotion code, the first thing is to get their permission. You got to educate them on the process. You get their permission to connect in directly with their subconscious. For lack of a better way of explaining that, it's a prayer between myself and God. And it is for their higher good. It is offering myself as a vessel for this work, and then intention to connect in with their subconscious, which I can then, as a physical experience, I know I connected in because it's a physical experience. And then I just muscle test. I actually say, if I'm working with Sarah, I'll say, my name is Sarah, and that will muscle test strong. Okay. So it is a pretty profound connection. Very interesting side note. Sometimes during the releasing process, we have a physical response to the releasing of the emotion. It is not uncommon for practitioners to also feel that sensation at the same time.
Wow, you're talking about taking advanced empathy to a new level.
Yes. Yes. Radical empathy. Okay. I like to describe it as logged into their Wi-Fi. And then what you do is you create an intention. So what I learned from that experience with that previous employer was that you seem to get the most work done when you work with relationships. Okay. Mom, dad, creepy uncle, past intimate relationships, past employers. You get a lot of work done, okay? Sometimes we do intentions around creating a new and healthy relationship with that emotion. Anxiety, for example, okay? They're here in my office saying, oh my goodness, my anxiety. So we want to rebalance that. But I still say, that's going to be a lot of emotions. If we deal with the relationships and we come back to anxiety, it's going to be taken care of. So we do that. We create the intention. I typically focus on relationships. And then we figure out how many emotions are we dealing, right? And then we use a chart. Dr. Riley Nelson created a really wonderful chart of 60 different emotions that really capture the emotional experience. Only one of them is necessarily positive, and that's called overjoy. And that's when we have such a positive feeling emotion that it overwhelms our system, right? But otherwise, you're dealing with abandonment, betrayal, anxiety, fear, guilt. By the way, number one Midwestern emotion, number one by far, humiliation, anger, helplessness, hopelessness, low self-esteem, lack of control. All these different emotions, shame, right? False pride, right? Then the number one thing that you find in humanity, really, which is feeling either unworthy or worthless. Worthiness seems to be a core human wound.
Yeah, regardless of the difference in content, the commonality is always relates to our self-worth or feelings of worthiness I think particularly as we get in later life, we look back at our life and say, did what we do was worthy? Did we have an impact? Did we have a positive effect? It goes back to Eric Erickson's generativity versus stagnation. And I think it all boils down to, did we lead a worthy life? Were we worthy of what? The gifts that we received, did we handle those with integrity? Those are all questions that I think as we get to mid and our end of life or final chapter in our lives, we ask those questions, I think, routinely. And that's why it's important, I think, to continue to embrace our past experiences to mold us and teach us in the present and, again, shape our futures.
Yes, exactly. So these are great things to get to. These are core issues of our human experience, right? When I look at that, when I have a new client and I hand them that chart and I say, hey, would you go ahead and take a look and see if you find yourself in there? What Dr. Nelson has found is that for the subconscious to communicate with us, these 60 emotions are enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so then what we do is there's different types of emotions. So we have to identify them. Okay. Everybody, there's many different types, but I found it boils down to about 2-3. Okay. The least common of all emotions, and you usually get them from your mom and your dad, are inherited trapped emotions. You can call them family curses, whatever. They can go back many generations. I do find some trends in that, right? Women who were really big in caring for the household tend to feel effort unreceived, taken for granted. I find that'll actually go back multiple generations if the family structure is very similar. Mm-hmm. In men who are then the breadwinners in those types of structured families, more conditional structured families, I find a lot of worry in them. Because like the family actually being housed and fed and everything is like all falls on them. So inherited trapped emotions come up. They're, you know, my brother has this superpower to zero in on those. Even when you're not dealing with primary relationships, really good, they tend to only come up in primary relationships, okay? They're rare. Another more common one is what we call absorbed trapped emotions. These are emotions that we picked up by just virtue of being in the presence of someone who's having a very intense emotional experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what happens is it creates that sympathetic vibration in us. We don't like that feeling and we end up stuffing it down and now we own it. And we can find those located in someone's subconscious driving their life.
And that would make sense that we carry the energy of emotions of those people that are close to us.
Yes. I call that the double-edged sword of it.
As you were talking, I was thinking of empaths who are so energy sensitive, and they carry so much energy from other people's traumas that eventually they become overwhelmed and they need to do some protective meditations or other protective techniques to protect their energy and to keep them more grounded. And I could see where the emotion code, the emotional release techniques can also be very helpful to individuals who are very energy sensitive.
Yeah. And Dave, I have a heck of a story for you on that. I have a heck of an example for that for you. Okay. That is the absorbed trapped emotions are profound in their implications. And then, of course, the most common emotions are just simply your emotional experiences, right? So and it basically breaks down to this. There's three aspects to a healthy relationship with emotions. First, you create a vibration of the emotion in the body. We all know that. We all know it's vibration. We all know we're energy and everything is energy. Okay? So if we accept that we're all basically stardust here, okay, then we create the vibration of the emotion in the body. Then we begin to feel the emotion. This is just a messenger. Fundamentally, it's giving us a binary message. Things are how we would like them in our environment, or things are not how we would like them. There's really only two types of emotions. That's a binary message. Once we've got this message, okay, and we've dropped our resistance to it, we've got the message. The third and healthy relationship with emotion is to then release that, dissipate that energy. But that's not what we do. We tend to stuff it down because we either don't want to feel it or we can't feel like we don't have the time and we tell ourselves we'll just deal with it later and we compartmentalize it. We never do, right? But regardless, we end up stuffing it down. Now, the interesting thing here is, and I know your background is working with addiction clients as well, okay? The interesting thing is we can find drugs to keep ourselves numb enough that we never sense the vibrations. The home of addiction lies right here. That's the emotional home. That's the addiction pain body.
Yeah, and I know a lot of your clinical work was with pain management with individuals with substance use disorders. And I know you've been very passionate about that. I could see the emotion code, the emotion release techniques could have a tremendous amount of impact and an immediate impact on individuals who have self-medicated to suppress painful feelings and painful traumas.
It is, we found the emotional home of addiction.
Yeah, and I think if those emotions get out and they're released, the fear factor becomes eliminated. And what we confront, we no longer fear.
Yeah, that's right. And so the process then looks like this. The actual process as we walk through it, okay? State the intention, muscle test it. Yes, there's trapped emotions there. What type of emotion is it? Inherited, absorbed? Okay. Then we go to the chart. There's two columns, six rows. We just muscle test. Is it in column A? No. Okay, it's in column B. Is it in the odd rows? Nope, the even rows. Okay, is it two? Is it four? Okay, now we know it's 4B. Now we're down to 5, just like that. Okay. Now remember, I'm doing the process. I'm doing the technique. I'm running it, but I'm connected to their subconscious. I'm giving prompts directly to their subconscious. So their subconscious is leading. Okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not making this up. All right. Even though to the uninitiated, it seems a little woo. I get it. Right. But once a person has a profound release experience, it doesn't matter. They're a true believer. Right? Then there's 5 and we just test each emotion until we find one that tests strong. Now the subconscious has let us. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now what's happened is that emotion is now triggered. It's a little ball of energy that's sitting there causing mischief. Once it gets triggered, once its trigger happens, it becomes a big active ball of energy. Okay. That follows a very specific path. I'm going to show off my bald head here for a second. Very specific path in the human body. Okay. It actually travels up the governing meridian forward to the thinker. Okay. Now we all know this one. This is our overthinker. And it's a son of a gun. We've all met this, right? We've all met this late at night when we're trying to sleep and our brain won't shut off. Okay. It leads to thoughts. So what we've got here is we've got a reversal of the traditional approach in therapy, which says, if you can just control your thoughts, you can control your emotions. Okay. The reversal is these trapped emotions are actually leading to thoughts, and a single trapped emotion unreleased over the course of a lifetime can potentially lead to thousands of thoughts. And this is why people come here to therapy. They sit here and they're like, make it shut up. They're being driven by these triggers all day long. They're running through a field of minds that looks like a perfectly normal field of grass. And these minds are just popping off all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, my anxiety, oh, my depression, oh, my trauma. They're thoughts. Okay. Now, those thoughts can then translate, not always, but they can translate into behavior. And if those trigger thought behavior happen enough, and it becomes habituated, yep, it can lead to a belief. And those beliefs are always false, but the things like, I'm not good enough. I'll never be loved. Gosh, I'll never be successful. In fact, the third level certification in Dr. Bradley Nelson's training is the belief code. Second is body code. And so we have this trigger, thought, behavior, eventually belief. And those things are just running our lives. We're, these triggers that we're not aware of are just running it. And now we found the source of panic attacks. Crack the code.
Sometimes people can just talk themselves into a panic attack just by what's going through their head. That isn't just the environmental triggers of being in a room full of people or being in a new environment. It's they can talk themselves into having a panic attack just by the beliefs and the thoughts that are triggering that behavior. And you can try thought stopping, you can try a variety of different things, but until the emotions come under control first and are released, then you can probably complement that with some nice cognitive behavioral techniques, yep, such as cognitive restructuring and such as thought stopping. But it's hard to stop a runaway train unless you find a way to put the brakes on it.
That's it. And so that's what people say about panic attacks. So like, it just, everything was going great. And I was sitting on the beach one day and like, all of a sudden I'm having a panic attack. There's no all of a sudden. There's a reason. So since, okay, so we've identified the emotion, right? So then it's time to release. Okay. Now, I have my clients use magnets just because we are dealing with energy, but it doesn't really matter. I have a client who's done a lot of work like this and she has a pacemaker and can't have any magnets near her body. It doesn't, and remember, everything begins and ends, everything miraculous begins and ends with intention. Okay. So now what you're going to do, you gave a series of prompts to your subconscious. It brought up all the information you need. And then you just tell the subconscious, okay, it's time to release this trapped emotion of whatever it is. Okay. And then you literally just reverse that flow. And it looks like this. And it's in these moments that people become true believers. When they really feel that emotion leaving and they're left just feeling so light and different. And then you just repeat that process for however many you found.
It sounds like it's very short-term therapy, but yet effective and focused.
That's it, exactly. And it's so fascinating. I'll tell you, David, it is so fascinating working with the subconscious, with people. Okay. I will say that it has taught me more about the human than anything else.
Our clients are sometimes, or not sometimes, are always our best teachers. We can learn from them as hopefully as much as they learn from us. Such the mantra of this podcast is we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. That was a really great explanation and discussion of the emotion code, emotional release techniques. Thanks for the education, my friend. We are coming close to the end of our time, so I want to ask you a couple of other questions. First and foremost, if you're going to leave our listeners with just one thing today, or even one thing with subcategories, what would that be?
Well, I want to share with you the case that I was talking about earlier when we were talking about absorbed trapped emotions, and it actually turned out to be his, and it has to do with a highly sensitive person, right? And then I just want to leave you with that story because I want your listeners to understand how profound an effect a single trapped emotion can have on a person's life and what healing that and releasing that can look like. Now, this story is an exemplary story, Okay. Obviously, we are very complex beings, right? And especially when you're dealing with relationships, okay? Mm-hmm. This was just one of the most profound healings that I'd seen, okay? My career has spanned both working with pain management patients as well as addiction patients. And even today, as part of Life's Work Clinic, we actually have a regional and statewide through telehealth, what we call Suboxone Clinic, which is an opioid addiction replacement and management program. Years ago, about 11 years ago, when we first started doing this, this patient came to us and he was suffering from a severe anxiety and panic attacks. And he had really profound opioid addiction, right? So we brought him in, got him stabilized, got him into counseling, right? And when I discovered the emotion cover, I thought, what have we got to lose here? Maybe we can make some more clinical progress here. Now, he's been very stable, has not had any relapse for all 11 years, okay, which is great. So I said to him, let's just do this. What do we got to lose, right? So I connected it with the subconscious. We made a real generalized intention. Sometimes you can be real general, okay? And then the subconscious will just bring up the elephant in the room. And the emotion that his subconscious brought up was the emotion of panic. Now, I've known him for almost a decade at this point, okay? And we both had a good chuckle about this, right? Because for the first 3 years of him being in our program, he kept showing up month after month with illicit benzodiazepines in his system because of his anxiety. We looked a little further into it. And through muscle testing, we discovered that it was 16 years old when he had first trapped this emotion of panic. So I said, hey, man, what's going on in your life at 16 years old? He's, oh, that's easy. His mom's mom, his maternal grandmother, suddenly got deathly ill. And his grandma's response to it and his mom's response to it was sheer and utter panic. Okay. And his mom would go from their little Northern Michigan community down to Indiana to take care of her mom. And it would be a big thing of panic and she'd bring that back. Right. And then sometimes she'd grab him and she'd bring him down there in the panic. And then they bring the panic back. This went on for a year. This client was very highly sensitive, was very empathic. He has a customer service job. We had already discovered that it's best for him to be by himself for about half an hour when he comes home, do a little meditation, don't go right into interacting with his girlfriend. Right. And so what ended up happening was he eventually developed, by stuffing this down, he eventually developed a panic attack disorder. And not only that, but because of the nature of panic attacks, when he just didn't know when they were going to happen, he also then developed a generalized anxiety disorder because of that. And then one day, someone gave him a Vicodin. And he was like, oh, wow, this is great, right? And by the time I met him, we were the third Suboxone program that he had tried, but nobody had told him, hey, you might want to do counseling too. And by the time he came to us, in order to stay out of withdrawal every day, not get high, but to stay out of withdrawal, he was taking 30 methadone pens every single day, 45 if he could afford them, find them, and that was when he could get high. So I said, hey, man, are you ready to release this emotion? Yeah, I'm ready to release this emotion. So we did the process. The practitioner does it with the client. So I match the energy and speed and intention of the client. We release the emotion. And that was about a year and a half ago. And that man has not had a single panic attack since that time.
And how old is he now?
42.
One session released 26 years of suppressed emotion.
Because of that, his generalized anxiety disorder went away as well.
Yeah, that would certainly be a natural progression for sure. Those symptoms would now be in permanent remission.
So if there's something I want to leave your audience with is that everybody's different. With this one person, this addiction, all of that trauma, all of that, we've really pivoted around one thing. Right? For most people, it's going to pivot around a whole bunch of things. Like the relationship I had with my former employer was 17 different emotions. Okay. So most of us are more complex than that. But it shows the power of what one trapped emotion can do in a person's life. And so I like to quote my favorite podcaster, Bedros Koulian. There's never any substitute for the important inner work. Okay. It doesn't matter to me if someone finds somatic therapy the best, if someone finds EMDR the best, if someone finds cognitive behavioral therapy the best, or if someone goes on in the internet, finds an emotion code practitioner either near them or through video. I just encourage people to look inside, to look at what they're holding. It can harm us physically. It can harm us socially. It can harm us mentally, emotionally. If it's addressed and released and actually dealt with, your life can improve in such a short period of time. And Dave, one of the things I want to end with too is that some of your clients or listeners might be other health licensed professionals, doctors, psychiatrists, social workers, counselors. Sometimes we look at treatment in this type of modality as we don't have the time for it. We don't have the energy for it. We do so much of it ourselves with our clients, right? I want to remind all the licensed health professionals out there that you deserve this type of healing too. And when you think that you've done all this work, you get into a practice like the emotion code and you realize you still have something to do. Yep. And that's why I created my coaching program. And that can be found, information can be found on our website.
Speaking of your website, what is the best way for people to contact you, find out more about your services, find out more about your other projects that you have going on?
That would all be contained at lifesworkclinic.com. You can link with a lot of the different things that we're doing there. Of course, we're on Facebook. Dave, I sent you that stuff. I mean, just put it in down below. Find us on there. Go to the Loving Our Life's Work podcast. It's a great podcast. I did take a break from that for a little while. I was putting some other business ideas together. Life's Work Clinic is a great clearinghouse for access to this type of information. And it feels weird self-promoting myself, but like, I just want to remind everybody that this work does not need to be really time consuming. It doesn't need to be re-traumatizing. It doesn't need to be expensive. It's a beautiful gift that we give ourselves.
Yeah, what affects us positively, we pass down to somebody else as well too. And it's the way it should be. When we discover something that's been empowering for us, we want to, as a result of our own traumas, we want to be of service to somebody else who's going through a challenge in their own life. So, Adam, thank you so much for being such a valuable guest contributor today on the podcast. I enjoyed our conversation, and I suspect we'll be talking again in the future.
It would be my pleasure.
Thank you, Adam. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.